Welcome back to ClassicalGuitarCorner.com. That's not what we are. We're not ClassicalGuitarCorner.com, but we are sponsored by them. This, of course, is the Classical Guitar Insider podcast that is sponsored by ClassicalGuitarCorner.com, where you can go for lessons with Simon Powis. Get online lessons. You don't have to get dressed at all. You can even take your shirt off if you already have it on. It doesn't matter. Simon doesn't care. Simon's there for you. You don't even have to take a guitar lesson. You can just go there, pay him, and just talk with him. You know, you have someone to talk to about your problems. Get it off your chest. I'm sure Simon has requested this. He said, tell people they can just call me, you know, as long as they pay me, that they can call me on Skype, and we can talk face-to-face about whatever it is that's troubling them, as long as they pay me. Simon didn't say that, and I'm sure Simon would prefer that you keep your clothes on, but I would prefer that you don't. I think that you should go to ClassicalGuitarCorner.com, sign up for a lesson package, make sure you tell them that Big Diaper Brett sent you, and then proceed to take all of your clothing off and see what Mr. Powis does. That's what I would do. Do as I would do. Make sure you tell him Big Diaper Brett sent it. Also sponsored by SavageClassical.com. Just go out there to Bayshore, New York, and go to SavageClassical.com and get the guitar of your dreams, okay? Just make sure that you tell him that Big Diaper Brett sent you. And go and just try out some guitars. And if you don't want it, honey, you don't have to get it. You don't have to get the guitar if you don't like it. He can send it to your house. And you can just send it right back if you don't like it. If you think it's a piece of shit. You just send that thing back to Richard Sage at SavageClassical.com. You don't need to put up with that shit. My daughter doesn't put up with shit. Well, how are you guys doing? It is a beautiful Tuesday morning here in New York City, folks. Actually, it's not. I have no idea what the weather's like. It's such a dark apartment. I have no idea what's going on outside. It's not. It's a shitty day. It's 64 degrees with a 70% chance of rain. And that's going to go all the way into the day. It's not going to end until 7 p.m. when I finally am able to come home. Just then it'll be like, all right, did you have a shitty enough day? We're gonna make it kind of a cold, wet night for you. It has been cold and wet in New York. Yesterday was kind of hot. Then the allergens hit. I don't know if you can hear that. But I'm now officially in allergy land, folks. That's right. I can't go outside without wheezing like a little old man with a rattling bottle of Crestor in his pocket. I'm doing the best I can. The show must go on, and it is. This has been a pretty good week. I had a pretty good weekend. Like I said, I interviewed Adam Del Monte, who's a beast flamenco guitarist and classical guitarist. And that was a push in the right direction. I had a good week at the bar, too. It was a good weekend. I'm starting to kind of train some people. We got some more people working there now. The workload is a little bit less as far as time is concerned. I was working those 12-hour days on the weekends and then working all week and getting up and doing guitar and getting up and doing this. And it was just, it was too much. I was really burning out. And I told them, and they reduced my hours and actually put some more people on. So that's great. I'm into it. I could definitely be behind a bar for 12 hours. What I can't be is behind a bar running up and down stairs, bussing tables, and doing everything else we were doing. It's just that kind of a place. I don't know if you've ever worked at a place like that. Anyway, it's just a place where we're all just sort of running the restaurant together. And they are a family to me. Anyway, that's what's been going on. What else was I going to tell you guys about? I don't know. There's not much else to say. And I was going to apologize about last week's episode. I didn't like anything about it. I didn't like the intro. I didn't like the interview. I thought that Daniel and Lulo are wonderful. This is not a reflection on them. I think they were if I remember correctly, and I have to tell you, this is back in August. So this is almost, this is 9 months ago now we're talking. So I don't want to say almost a year, but you know what it is. Three quarters of a year in, if I'm doing my math correct, if I know how many months are in a year, and I think I do. I'm going to go with 12. August happened, and it was hot. It was the first interview. I don't think if I remember correctly, we didn't have the air conditioning working yet, or there wasn't any fans, and it was just, we were in this hot room. It was the first one. It was early in the morning. They were from Germany. They didn't know who they were talking to, and they were just probably like, my publicist told me to do this. How long are we here? And I think I was interrupting a lot. I think that was an episode where I definitely listened to myself and I cringed, because I had been told, as you know, if you've listened to the 100th episode, I have been told that I interrupt too much. And that is true. I do. So with Adam, I went out there and I tried not to interrupt so much. And I think it went really well. I didn't have to interrupt because he was so interesting though. So you get it? I mean, and also Lula was interesting. That's not to say, you get what I'm saying. You get, the point is that I went out, I wanted a brand new, interview. It's a new day. This is a new show. I think I just released last week's episode because I was like, I had to get something out. I wanted to, and sometimes that's the way this is. When you have 106 of these things, this is the 107th episode now, right? If I'm not mistaken, it might be the 108th. If that's the case, I got to get these things out. It's just me doing this. So some of them are going to be incredible, like I think this one is, and some of them are going to suck. I even think in the intro of the last one, there was so much self-consciousness 2 weeks ago. There was so much going on in me. Was it 2 weeks ago or was it just last week? I think it was 2 weeks ago. I don't know. I didn't like the way I sounded. I think I sounded hurt, and I think I sounded like I wasn't. I had fortified myself in bullshit, basically, is what was going on. And I was talking about, just stuff I wasn't, I don't know, I'm not proud of it. I like this me. This is the one that I'm willing to be. Guys, I am in a better place this week. All right? I'm in a better place. It's not going to stay that way. It'll change. And every day is different. I'm working on dystonia again, so that's good. I'm not going to tell you who I'm working on it with until it works. But a listener was kind enough to reach out to me and has offered me his services for free. And I don't want to talk about who he or she is on the show until or unless this works for me. According to him, it has worked for other people. And he has been really kind about it. The only thing is it's going to take 2 hours a day. And I got to get started on that. So I have to wait until the summer to start on it because I just don't have the time now. And I also want to keep on writing. I want to keep this solo guitar project coming along. I don't want to stop it so that I can do a dystonia thing that may or may not work. That's all. And he understands that. He's been very kind and understanding of the fact that, I've been through several of these programs. Some of them have taken months. Some of them have taken almost a year. And it's like, I haven't had any luck with them. So the last couple of people that have approached me about getting help from them, certainly if they charge money, I cannot do it. I can't afford to do it anymore. But if they want to help, I also understand that there's a time commitment involved. And so he's been very kind about that. Anyway, so that's going on. That's an exciting development. And I look forward to sharing with you how that goes. But I really want to be able to put the time into it that he has said is required. And I want to do it in an organized way. I don't want to just take elements of what he's saying. I want to do it exactly the way he says to do it. So anyway, that's what's going on in my life, and let's get on with a very exciting interview. If you are one of those few people that listens to the intro because you know me from high school or whatever, and you don't generally listen to the interviews, this might want to be one of those that you do listen to the interviews. This is a good one. It's informative. It's fun. We talk about more than guitar, and it's a very exciting interview by two people who love Spain, even though I've never been there. I cannot afford to go to those things. But, you know, I will one day go to Spain. But I, you know, I have a relationship. All of us as guitarists, as classical guitarists, have a relationship with Spain. So this is for us, folks. All right, here's one of the best in the business, Adam Del Monte, sponsored by Savage Classical and Classical Guitar Corner and Rosetta Stone.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Perfect.
You know where we are. We're in your Airbnb.
Yeah.
That's right. Do you know the guy's name?
Rav.
Ralph. Look for Ralph.
No, Rav.
Rav?
R-A-V. He's Rav.
A pretty cool guy, and we're in the Lower East Side off the Lancy Street.
That's right, baby.
It's a tough... It just feels like you are in a movie. Feels like you're in, like, the French Connection.
And imagine I just forgot my credit card in the machine, and the lady actually gave it back to me.
She gave it back to you?
Yeah.
See, we are nice.
See?
We're not the worst.
The best.
I think we're the best.
I agree. That's why I came.
I don't get this whole idea of New Yorkers being mean.
That's total myth.
It's
I remember
a myth.
I came here 25 years ago. That was literally before I arrived in America. And I arrived with some luggage, and I took the subway. I was looking for a friend of mine, address. And I said, excuse me, how do I get to... And he was living in Astoria. And literally five people lined up in the subway to give me directions. They were fighting over who was going to give me directions and help me out.
Yeah, that's what they do.
You know, it was awesome.
It is.
That is such a great welcome. In LA, people don't even turn around to say to give you the time of day.
They don't care. California as a whole, I mean, I love my family. I'm from Stockton.
Oh, wow.
And I spent some time as a kid in Manhattan Beach, but no, they're not friendly in California. There's a certain
level.
They're
fake.
You guys are a bunch of fake.
Yep.
The thing is that there's an undercurrent of violence there.
It is.
Do you feel that?
Oh, do I? Every day.
It's like you can't really look at anybody.
Yeah, it's very covert, and they've really managed to shape a language that
hides it.
But that actually broadcasts that covert hostility.
Right. I don't know so much about Southern California in my adult life, but I know that in Northern California that I instantly feel a feeling of I shouldn't just ask people for directions. Maybe in San Francisco, maybe in the cities it's different. Maybe we're just in a city.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we like it here. Did you ever live here?
I've never lived here, but I've been here quite a few times. Mm-hmm. I've played in Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
Carnegie Hall.
The opera. I was just reading about the opera you did with Dawn Upshaw.
Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah, she's terrific.
She was so formative.
She's amazing. Yeah, she's really an
icon. Was she nice to you? She was cool?
Oh, she was super cool.
Yeah, I think she's going through something right now. She's got she's been diagnosed with
cancer. Oh, I think that was a while ago.
Oh, so she's...
Yeah,
she's,
I think she's over that.
She beat it.
She beat it, as far as I know. I haven't seen her in several years, but
Well, that's... So that's when you did... That's what you were doing
at Lincoln Center, and then Carnegie Hall, and then I played here with at the Iridium with Buster Williams.
Back when Les Paul was alive?
No, not that far back.
Yeah.
That was... when was that? That was like 2010 or 11. We did a jazz flamenco fusion project.
Yeah.
And then we repeated it again, and we played at Smoke.
Uptown.
Uptown.
Upper West Side.
Yep. And that was great. So, you know, each and every time, New York has been inspiring and awesome.
Yeah.
So I love coming here. Always great things happen.
So. Yeah. You've been mostly relegated to the Upper West Side.
Yeah.
Though.
Yes.
Have you ever been to Brooklyn?
Once.
Once. Never again.
Well,
it was nice to come out here because actually the thing people don't understand about where I'm located in Brooklyn is that I am closer to here than I am to anywhere else. Mm. It's almost like Brooklyn just seems to be an extension of downtown lower Manhattan.
Right.
So I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm just a downtown guy, but all the business that we're in is up there, uptown. So we have to go up there. You're going to rehearsal too.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and let's talk about. Let's start with that opera. How did that come about? It seems like from what I've read, I haven't really listened to it, but it seems like it had a significant guitar part.
Yes. And
an opera that's relatively rare.
It is rare. Up until. But anyway, I'll get to that in a minute. But
recently.
Up until recently, because I just actually wrote my own flamenco opera.
Really?
Yes.
You wrote it?
Yes.
Did you do the libretto?
Yes.
For it?
Yes.
You did?
In Spanish, yes.
In Spanish?
Yes.
What's it about?
Well,
that's amazing.
It is a story about Jews.
Wait, is this the first? Is it? Come on, yes. You're a classical guitarist writing an opera,
a flamenco opera.
Okay, it's Sephardic.
Yep.
Sort of. Yep. Okay, go for it.
So
I'm ready. I'm excited about this.
The elevator pitch goes as follows. It is a tale about Jews, gypsies, Christians.
There's not an elevator in this building.
Okay.
We had
to. So the pitch, while you walk up the four flights of stairs and get your booty going.
That's right.
Booty muscles going.
That's exactly right.
It is a story about Jews, gypsies, Christians, and Moors at the beginning of the Spanish Inquisition.
Okay.
What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, it's just a bunch of people that like each other in the same room.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an opera that I wrote. I finished writing it about 2.5 years ago. It took me 2.5 years to write.
I'd imagine so.
What
did you do for the orchestration? Did you get help with that?
No.
Sort of like a Korsakov sort of situation?
I mean, obviously I studied score analysis and stuff like that, but, and I certainly listened and studied the masters, but not in a very academic, deeply academic fashion, rather just sort of overview intuitive, because the truth is the nature of a flamenco opera, because it's never been done before, there was no template to follow or to go by. So in reality, I had to create my own template, which was both difficult on one hand because you had nothing to lean on and nothing to gain perspective through and to compare it to. And on the other hand, it was easier because it was liberating, because I could make up my own rules as I went along.
Right.
And because I composed on the guitar, and then of course I blew it all up and made it bigger, also that offered me a very unique angle into the opportunities and possibilities of orchestration and so on.
Right. And when you were doing that, were you bouncing ideas off of your friends?
My then girlfriend, now wife, Mercedes, who's from Argentina, and we did meet doing the Golikov opera, the Ana de Mar opera.
Right.
We met doing that because she was the preparer for that opera in Argentina. As we started dating, she one day approached me and said, "Honey, have you ever thought of writing an opera?" And she gave me that look where I couldn't say no, so I just said yes.
Why would she ask that?
Well, she had this instinct. And I'm like, yeah. And I said, "What's it about?" And I just, quickly thinking on my feet, not wanting to disappoint her, came up with a snippet of a synopsis of the story, and she was, "That's great." I'm like, "No, it's not. That's, yes, it is, no." So half an hour, yes, no, yes, no. Because if I say yes, then I'm all in. I don't just, give empty answers. Yeah. And as soon as I said, "Okay, fine, yes, it is a good idea." And now I'm like, "Oh, shit. Now I have to do this.
Now I have to write a fucking opera."
Now I have to write an opera. So I took 1 year just to take notes. Like, I had no idea how to do it. I certainly, at the beginning, wasn't planning on being the librettist. That was for sure.
Yeah.
I have a good friend who's the daughter of a famous flamenco dancer. Her name is La Chana from Barcelona. She's like my second mother, my gypsy mother, and a very good friend of mine. Iconic flamenco dancer. She was in a movie by Peter Sellers, the original old Peter Sellers in the 60s. And so her daughter is the first female gypsy novelist in Spain. Ever. And she wrote an 800-page book about Mahler, a fictional novel about Mahler. Insane.
So that's inspiring because of his Judaism, or?
Or
I don't know.
To her,
Mahler was.
Oh yeah, he was Jewish and everything. Yeah, yeah. No, but that's not the point. The point is that this gypsy novelist, who's now my friend also, Nuria, she was supposed to be the librettist. But yeah. For some reason, it just didn't pan out because, the Skype connection was weak. The phone connection would have been way too expensive. Anyway, long story short, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to start writing this thing, and then you correct all my mistakes. And that's what I did. I started writing the libretto. I was acting it out, living it out, just kind of in this total trippy bubble. And
did you take time off to do this?
I took time off from sort of, aggressively pushing and pursuing sort of career moves of hustling for concerts. Yes.
Right.
But, whatever concerts just came my way, of course I did.
Right.
So I couldn't completely take off. I was still teaching, of course. I was teaching. I teach at USC.
Yeah.
My life continued as normal, but I would carve out, obviously, big chunks of time to do this. And my wife, who is a pianist, opera coach, repetiteur, and conductor, sort of oversaw my first steps, my first baby steps of, writing this and then writing the obviously the lyrical parts, and I should mention that this opera has, it's a mixture, it's a fusion of lyrical voices and flamenco singers and flamenco voices. And it has flamenco dance as well.
So the like that's in there, but it also has lyrical opera.
Yeah, real opera singers.
Sopranos.
Yeah. And basses and all, and tenors. And choir, chorus, has flamenco dancers. And of course, a full orchestra and so on. Guitar and cajon. And
cajon,
yeah, it's like a, it's a box, but it's originally a Peruvian percussion instrument,
okay,
which has been adopted.
You sit on it,
yeah, and you bang on it. But it has since undergone many transformations for the better in the hands of the flamencos. Basically, the process was amazing. I mean, it was 2.5 years of bliss, of like being in this
creative
bubble, and my wife was there, you know.
It's the dream. It's like what you dream of an artist being.
Yes.
Like the highest level.
It was one of the best periods of my life.
And this was this commissioned or no?
No.
No. This is just you.
Yeah.
Just doing it.
Doing it. My wife said, have you ever thought of doing it? I said, yes.
The wife issue, and I have this thing. When did you meet your wife?
8 years ago.
Okay, so this is a passionate new relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how old you are.
I'm 51.
Okay, so this is
it's my second marriage.
I feel like second marriages or whatever, what I've experienced romantically is certainly a maturity, and that's what everybody says. Well, you approach things with a more mature attitude, but when you really fall in love.
Mm.
And they become a muse. It's really intense.
Yes.
And you want to be on your best behavior because you're an adult and you know that that works. So it's like, just when she asked you to do that, you must have just gone like, I'll do it, of course.
It wasn't that. It wasn't, it wasn't I'll do anything. It was more like,
maybe I'm just going through some shit.
No, that's fine. It's okay. We all project, but it's fine.
I'm like, I know why you did it.
No.
You're madly in love and you don't know what to do with that energy.
No, the truth, I mean, there is a subtler component to that answer that went, that sounded like a yes, which was a yes. The component was, you know, she is a pianist. You know, people think, oh, you're both musicians, you play together. Well, no, not at all. We're in completely different worlds.
Sure.
However.
And she's a solo piano classical.
No, she's not a soloist. Well, she's an accompanist.
Accompanist. That's what, yeah.
And she's a repetiteur and she's a conductor.
Repetiteur.
That means somebody who does a rehearsal pianist.
Okay.
You know, so they prepare those pianists.
Repetiteur.
They prepare the singers at the piano with their parts and the orchestral parts. So they play their piano reduction of the opera while they rehearse the singer, so the singers know their cues and know what's going on.
Great.
So that's what she does. So she needs to know the entire piece.
So the repetiteur is someone that works exclusively with operas.
With singers, yes.
But with large groups.
Yes.
Not just with just like playing art song. That's an accompanist.
Right, exactly.
Okay, great.
Absolutely.
That's the difference. That's the distinction.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Perfect.
New
information.
Yeah. And so she, you know, so the way she said it, it was, I saw it as an opportunity for us to have an element of bonding.
Yes.
It was more about that than pleasing her or anything like that. I said yes because there was something that I knew that if I would have said no, I would have missed out on an opportunity for us to do bond something artistically.
Yeah.
And spiritually, you know, if had I said no.
Which, as you said,
it would have been disappointing.
When you're in a relationship with another artist, that's not something that happens often.
Yeah.
You would think it does.
But
it doesn't.
Yeah, not necessarily, yeah.
Right.
So, needless to say, it was the challenge of a lifetime, which, you know, it was great because, I mean, and my wife, you know, when I first started writing the opera, you know, and she would say, okay, just make sure, just follow one very simple rule. The syllables, the syllabic rhythm of the words need to fall organically in the beat. Don't do any weird rhythmic shit with the syllables and twist them.
Which we tend to do.
Which
as guitarists.
Not just guitarists. It's the modern approach to vocal writing. It's, you know, and it's, in the end, you think you're being clever, but in the end, it's just annoying and horrible.
Right.
In most instances.
You're going to get less performances.
Yeah. And so I said, okay, I'm going to follow that. Fair enough. You know, so I started writing off. I'm like, every minute, for the first few bars, I would turn around and I'm playing it on Sibelius. And she's like, is this okay? Yes, it's good. Okay. And three more lines. Is this still good? Yes, it's still good. I'm like very, you know, tepid, you know, very, very treading into that water very carefully until, you know, I got my bearings and
eventually you figured it
out. And, you know, and then orchestrated, and then she you know, also studied orchestration, and she kind of, you know, maybe gave me a nudge here and there. But yeah, I did the entire thing, and it was, you know, she corrected my Spanish, being from Argentina. She helped with some basic Spanish thing. I mean, I speak Spanish fluently, but I never studied it academically.
Right.
And so, you know, my grammar and stuff is not totally kosher. So, you know, mm-hmm. but in terms of the flow of the ideas and everything, I was in this very unique space at the time.
And when she, like, sort of, you know, corrected your grammar, is there, this is an Argentine, this, am I correct? This is,
yeah, but the grammar is pretty similar. I mean, there's, you know, the style of writing was more
Spanish. I imagine.
It was Spanish, of course, but it was
Spanish, you know, Spanish.
But it was, yeah, Spanish, and I went for a slightly more. There was an aesthetic choice I had to make. You know, am I going to write this in like this ancient Spanish style? And I thought, no, that's going to be lame. You know, yeah. To try and imitate Lope de Vega, you know, right. That would be really, or Cervantes, that would be really silly. So I wrote in a just a, sort of a generic Spanish,
yes. Yeah,
sort of a timeless, a little bit, you know, right. Timeless. Just really, you know, sometimes I would, it would be more old fashioned in certain moments. Sometimes not so much, and there's a little. Of course, there's some Hebrew in there. I use a Hebrew prayer, which I've set to music,
right,
and so on. Yeah, I mean, and then of course Nuria, my gypsy author friend, also corrected some Spanish, and you know, and then finally the final correction came when we brought on board the our director, Daniel Helfgott, who's also he's an Argentinian, but super educated.
Right.
Yeah, he's actually a fourth cousin
of David
Helfgott.
Right.
Yes, of the pianist from Shine.
Right.
Yes, he actually is a fourth cousin removed from this guy.
Because I was like, that's not the same guy from that movie back 20 years ago,
yep.
Is it? And it's, I was like, wait, it is.
It is.
Okay, so yep. It's the same guy. Fourth cousin.
Fourth cousin.
Oh, wow.
Pretty crazy, I know. So he's our director, and as there's a saying in Romanian that says, if you don't have an old man, buy one.
okay, that's yeah. Interesting.
Yes, you know, we in our, today's age, old is bad. Old is, you know, passé or whatever. No, in my world, old is wisdom. So, yeah. Yes, buy one.
Get one on board with your project.
Absolutely, and this guy has the experience of having directed more than 200 operas in his life.
How old is he?
He's 71.
Okay.
Not that old.
Yeah, not that old, but definitely that's what you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone experienced, not some young punk who's out there who doesn't know what the hell's up and he thinks he's, you know.
Right.
You know.
But he's still lucid.
Oh, very lucid.
That's
very much.
71 is still cool.
Yeah.
I used to think that was like.
Yeah, he doesn't drink and he doesn't smoke. He's a nice Jewish boy.
There you go. Well, that'll keep him going then.
Yeah. But, you know, so, I mean, he's very excited about this project, you know. And as of now, we have programmed a workshop/reduced format performance of the opera. By the way, it's called Llantos.
Llantos,
LLANTOS, which means cries or clamors. In English, it really loses the spirit of.
What does clamors mean? Like,
right.
Just like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
No.
So we have January 30th is sort of the soft premiere of this opera in a workshop format.
In LA?
At the Tucson Desert Song Festival. In Arizona.
Okay, great.
And it's going to be with the five main characters, plus my wife at the piano and myself on the guitar.
So no orchestra?
No orchestra. Right. It's a very low-budget kind of situation, and again, it's a workshop format.
I think it's amazing that you're doing this.
But I'm excited.
Yeah, you should be. I mean, I don't know you that... I don't really know you, but I'm already immensely proud of this. This is the kind of thing that we talk about on the show that people need to be doing, that they need to be taking their time and spending with.
Yeah.
And you completed it.
Yeah.
You didn't just start it.
Yeah, and I certainly...
This is the kind of thing that we all have ideas about, but you actually finished it.
Well, you know, it was one of those things that once I started it, because like I said, I don't say yes lightly. People ask me things, can you come? And if I say yes, it's because I'm really going to go. You know, unless something, God forbid, really serious happens. But if I say I'm going to do something, then I do it. And the minute that's why it took half an hour to say, okay, yeah, sure. You know?
Yeah.
It wasn't just, yeah, sure. I really had to mull it over and sort of digest, what does this actually mean to do this? You know? Yeah. And of course, I bit I bit off way more than yeah, I bit off way more than I thought I could chew, so I had to buy a bigger mouth.
And an old man.
Right.
It was an expensive trip to the meat market.
Exactly.
As far as you know, your decision to go with the Spanish Inquisition, what was that about? And actually, I was right about this Cards Against Humanity. I'm sitting here and I'm looking.
Oh.
See, that's the tape from the package.
Right? Yes, right?
I told you it was a gift.
It was a gift.
It's unopened. That's
it's going to be it's waiting to be regifted.
It's regifted. Yeah, everybody's got six Cards Against Humanity boxes. We're using them as microphone boosters in this Airbnb. You guys can hear too. Everybody can hear like the sort of Lower East Side honking.
Yeah.
Sort of fire engines going off once in a while. Your decision to go with the Spanish Inquisition.
Ah.
What's I mean, cuz I haven't that's an area of history and I do casually study history.
Yeah.
But that's an area of history that I haven't really delved into.
Yeah.
What do you have like a sort of a reaction to the Inquisition?
Yeah.
Is this something that you were exposed to early that sort of frightened you or?
Yes. I remember.
Fascinating.
I mean, I lived, you know, I grew up in Spain.
It's something that took place like in the 14 something, right?
Late, it started 1478. Late
15th century.
Okay. 1478. By a Dominican friar who had the bright idea of inspiring King Ferdinand to adopt the whole idea of the Inquisition. That's where it was born, the Spanish Inquisition. Of course, before that, there was a French Inquisition. You know, I lived in Spain from the age of two, intermittently. You know, 10 years total, from the age of two to five, I was in Malaga and in Granada. And then I went on to live in Germany and England and then back to Spain and then into Israel and then and just moved around a lot. And, you know, these little scenes throughout my life that sort of form a certain feeling about things. You know, the first of which was as I was living in Benalmádena, which is this little, which was this tiny village in near Malaga. In 1968, there was like 15 houses there and a church and a bullfighting rink. You know, now it's this massive touristy built-up Vegas-y looking thing. But back then it was like extremely quaint. And I remember walking into this dark, very poorly lit church with my friends. And then, you know, it was very creepy going in there. I'd never been to inside a church before. And then this priest comes up to me and wants to shake my hand, and I just turn around and ran like hell.
The right move.
I think now I know it was. Now I have confirmation that it was.
Hey,
Yeah. So you know, seeing this big Jesus hanging from the cross and this creepy priest coming up to you. Yeah, I was 2 or 3 years old.
He doesn't need to be shaking anybody's hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just say hi.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. So anyway, that was the no. I mean that you know, those are flavors of the echoes of the Inquisition. No, but you know, the Inquisition. But
the Inquisition.
I mean, you know, just kind of hearing
when you were little.
When I was little, absolutely. Look, when I lived in the caves of Sacromonte in Granada, you know, I heard endless tales and stories about the mingling of Jews and Gypsies, of Sephardic, of Maranos, of conversos, of you know, the Jews who converted to Catholicism, but were then being persecuted by the Inquisition.
You'd hear this from your father or your mother?
From my mother, from my father, from people in Granada, from historians in Granada, from people who just, you see, so much of Spanish history is oral, and people just, you know, transmit stories,
right?
You know, about things. I mean, you have. How do you explain that you have, you know, gypsies called Adonai, which in Hebrew means God, right? Mm. And so all these tiny little cultural things, they're peppered with sort of Hebrew things, mysteriously, and people use them, use certain words, certain names, often wrong, but they don't know where they come from, you know, like the you know, the famous sort of cliche that people always talk about where, oh, my grandmother used to go to the basement every Friday night and light candles and do this and this and that, and she would mumble something, and I asked him, Grandma, what are you doing? He says, I don't know, but my mom used to do that, and her mom used to do that. So, I mean, those are the sort of the stories that are passed down, and the, you know, both the fears, the experiences that have been passed down from generation to generation of the conversos, because, you know, that is exactly why the Inquisition came about, because the Catholic kings started to suspect that, or the church was suspecting that the Jews who had converted to Catholicism were secretly Judaizing, you know, Judaizantes, estaban Judaizando. And so that's why the Inquisition came about, was to probe and to see, hey, are you really a Catholic? Well, why aren't you eating pork? And why on Saturday are you not doing this? And, you know, and sort of obvious things like that. They would sort of start to probe.
Would they use, do you know for a fact, would they use pork? Would they sit there and like be like, here, take a bite of this or something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would be like a common.
Oh, absolutely. Inquisition. Absolutely. Practice. I mean, the name Marrano, which is often a term called used for the converted Jews, Marrano is a word, it means pig. So it is a name that they called the converted Jews who now ate pork.
Yeah.
So they're right. Marranos. You know, Marrano, it's a pejorative term for a Jew who just converted to Catholicism.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's a very intense,
so
very loaded
history. So they were a lower caste, too, probably, like, they were like, well, yeah, they've converted, but they just converted.
Well,
so we're not too-
that was the term that was given by the Jews who had not yet converted to the converted. However, the Catholic, the reason the Jews converted was two or threefold. One, depending on the period.
As opposed to just leaving.
Right. They could have just left, but, you know, it wasn't easy to leave back in the day. But the first reason would be that it was they would be forced to convert. It's either you die or you convert. Okay, I'll convert.
Right.
And some people prefer to die.
Yeah.
Or you leave, or expulsion. Some converted because it was just sort of general, in better times, right? They would convert because of just general social pressure, a little bit like Mahler, only more intense.
Right. Did Mahler convert?
Yes.
He converted to Catholicism.
For the same reason, like pressure. He just felt pressured. You know, he couldn't get that job to be the conductor, the musical director of the Vienna Opera, of the Vienna Symphony.
Right. Because when he came here, did he go back to being, because he conducted New York, too.
Yeah, I don't think he ever converted, went back. Not that I know.
That's just amazing.
It's crazy, you know?
He must have just been a non-believer or something.
Probably. Too. He was just a sort of a secular Jew.
Right.
In any case. And then, but the one of the reasons many Jews converted was just to have less social pressure.
Yeah.
Have more social acceptance and have the ability to actually get better jobs.
Right. Social mobility.
Social mobility.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, so many Jews, you know, even though they were still Jews, they would work for the king.
Yeah, because this isn't that long ago. I mean,
500 years.
Right, which really in the scheme of things is not, we're talking about late medieval, probably in Spain.
Yep.
Spain had not experienced any sort of
Renaissance yet.
That was going on in England and Italy.
Yeah.
So the thing is that it was sort of a, at that point you want to say it's a little bit backward, but I mean they also sent Christopher Columbus at around the same time, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that?
Yeah. No, exactly at the same time. I mean the opera.
It's the same king.
Yep. And Isabel,
yeah.
I mean, the opera ends with the expulsion of the Jews. Surprise, surprise.
Right.
The cutting off of the ears of the gypsies, and it was the same year where Columbus sailed off. In fact, I think it was the next day that he sailed off.
Was there any
the day of expulsion?
There must have been some sort of speculation as to Columbus sailing off. Well, I mean, in that time. What was Queen Isabella? I mean, from what I remember as a child in America being raised to, you know, in the 80s, to like Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, right.
And now we found out that he was an asshole. But the thing is that was there any sort of pushback against Ferdinand? Like within his own court? Who knows?
I don't know.
You don't know. So this is not...
I studied the history, but not in that much depth.
At this point, it's just a story based on it. And you're just haunted by the image of these people being forced to convert. That's the operative.
Yeah.
The operative isn't just the death. It's being forced.
It's having your identity taken away from you.
Absolutely. Your soul.
Your soul.
And
your essence of who you are is being taken away, is being raped
away from you. Imagine the thing that's amazing about that, because for me, as a secular person, if I met a nice Jewish girl, I would convert if her family wanted me. I'd just be like, you got it, no problem.
Yeah.
Tell me what to do and I'll do it. as far as these people are concerned, especially in that era, to them, they were thinking like they were giving up eternal peace in their sense so that they could. I mean, I'm assuming that that's the way it works.
Well, that's the thing.
Were they afraid that they were like, well, I'll go to, I guess I'm going to hell, but I don't want to deal with this right now because this guy's going to burn my village and kill my family.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, there is a, you know, pikuach nefesh.
It's horrendous.
Yeah, but in Judaism, there is a, you know, there are many concepts, obviously, but right. One is called pikuach nefesh, which means, you know, saving your soul, you know, basically saving your life.
Right.
In other words, you know, you do what you got to do to survive. You know, there's a very basic principle to that. And when your life is in true danger, then, you know, I think there's only two things that you can, by Jewish law, that you cannot do. Like, you know, for two things you do give your life for.
Right.
One is, if someone tells you, kill this person, if not, I'll kill you, then you say, fuck it. You kill me, whatever.
Right.
Or, we want you to curse God. You know, chilul Hashem. So those are the two conditions where you say, no, for those two things, I will die. Anything else, your physical existence takes precedent.
So that's the thing.
So eating pork, you can eat pork. You can, you know, not do Shabbat. You can not do. You can convert. You can do whatever as long as you're saving your physical life.
You're
not
going to hell.
You're not going. Whatever. I mean, we don't believe in hell.
This is,
in that way. Yeah.
Right.
But not in that way at all. But. The main thing is the fact is that most Jews, or many right. of them, secretly still kept their Jewish faith and practiced it
right.
to the best of their ability. That's the point.
Right.
You
the
see?
Secret.
The secret thing. And
clandestine sort of
yeah,
worship.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? And I think my lifestyle, the way I was raised and just my circumstances, just had glimpses of it, yes. But, you know, the focusing a little bit more on the nature and the character of flamenco, which has so much to do with pain and, you know, the expression of suffering in its most sublimated form, is, I think at the core of it lies, you know, this inquisition, this torture, this persecution, because flamenco is definitely, you know, music of the downtrodden and the persecuted, you know, and I think that the Inquisition is a part of that atmosphere that bred this, you know, this fear and the way to feel liberated from that fear is the expression that we hear in the flamenco singing.
Certainly in the visual too,
absolutely
in the dancers' faces.
Yes,
there's not a lot of smiling.
Yeah, exactly.
Other dance forms, you see people smiling.
Yeah, and some fake smile. Whereas in flamenco, you do have the very full gamut of
what I've seen
super
just,
tragic
right.
to sarcastic. The right. happiest you get is sort of the sarcastic,
right.
you know, playful.
Right.
But the silly smile, I mean, yeah, sure, some dancers dance with a silly smile, but, you know, right. they're not very...
That's
you know,
not what's going not on in the album that. Covers. The album covers is like, is pain.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah. So anyway, I think the subject matter that best reflects the expression and the soul of flamenco is through the Inquisition. And, you know, and definitely, you know, the Jewish element in flamenco, I mean, there are many anecdotes that I have experienced in, you know, throughout my living in Spain, where I would put a recording of Joe Amar, who is a Moroccan cantor who also sang popular songs, but he was a liturgical singer, a cantor of the Sephardic Moroccan style. And it sounded, you could really hear the ancient roots of flamenco in that style of singing, in that vocal expression in particular. And I was like, God, can nobody hear this? This sounds like the grandfather of flamenco. And one day I had one of my buddies over, a great flamenco singer, Alfonso El Veneno, with whom I've worked with many times. And I said, hey, Alfonso, check this out. And he's listening, and he's like, gosh, you know, this is how my grandfather used to sing. I'm like, really? Yeah. Wow, that's great. So, you know, fast forward a few months into the future, and a buddy of mine from Israel comes. You know, he's a Yemenite Israeli. And I play for him one of my favorite flamenco singers, Manolo Caracol, right? He was an old-timer from the 60s, 50s, 60s. Great singer, one of my favorites. And I play Manolo Caracol to my Yemenite friend. And he's like, wow, that sounds great. You know, this is how my grandfather used to pray. You know, so people having these gut responses to the echoes of the sounds of what they're hearing, identifying the lineage of the source of where they feel they come from.
Right.
You know, so...
And when he says, this is what my grandpa used to play, that's not... Or this is the way they used to sing. That's not a normal reaction. That's almost DNA. It's like that pain has made its way into the DNA of the people.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, those responses are, again, what fed the idea, what feed the idea of, you know...
I don't even remember the way my grandpa coughed. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
He was good. He was a good guy. Hey, Brad, how you doing?
There you go.
That's it. That's grandpa.
Yeah.
No singing there. Anyway, so yeah. So as far as like... you know, I really like how you're bringing in, and you're connecting things based on not necessarily direct associations. Like the flamenco is there because of its emotional sort of cousinship, or its emotional cousins with the Inquisition, with the subject matter.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily, you know, historically. Is it historically traced to the Inquisition?
Flamenco?
Yes.
Probably not.
Probably not.
No.
We're talking about two completely different eras.
I mean,
this is like gypsy music from 200 years ago.
No, I mean, flamenco, look, the whole trajectory of flamenco is much more sort of shrouded in mystery when you go back.
Because I don't know, is it Spanish? Is it gypsy? Is it both?
It's both. Spanish, just the word Spanish is a loaded word, because...
So is gypsy, right?
Yeah, of course, right. Because not all gypsies do flamenco. Only Spanish gypsies
not
do flamenco.
Not all gypsies are in Spain.
No, of course not. You have Romanian gypsies aren't doing flamenco.
No.
So flamenco is not purely a gypsy thing, but it's a mixture of Spanish folklore from Andalusia, Arabic chanting, Sephardic chanting, Byzantine chanting, you know.
Byzantine, I mean, being like Eastern Europe?
Yeah. No, not Eastern Europe, but, you know, Turkish and the like. But, you know, the Romans were there, the Greeks were there. I mean, everybody that passed through the Iberian Peninsula, both as a conqueror or as a migrant, such as the case. The only two real migrant tribes were the Jews and the Gypsies in Spain. Everybody else came and left as a conqueror. The Moors conquered Spain and so on. So did the Romans. But they all those cultures leaving their imprint on the Spanish Peninsula became that deep DNA that, you know, became Spanish music. Now, the gypsies, their role in flamenco is that they are the catalyst of everything, because the rhythmic talent that they brought over from India, that's in their DNA, and that they also pick up through North Africa and the Berber culture and everything, all that got mixed up. You know, they would take a simple little folk song and they would, you know, gypsy it up.
So the gypsy stuff is from like an Indian tribe, from what I understand.
Yes.
Initially.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I mean, there's many theories about that. There's one, you know, the word, and I actually mentioned that in my opera. The Old Testament refers to a wandering tribe called the Tzoanim.
Tzoanim.
Tzoanim, which in Hebrew means gypsies. Now, check it out. How do you say gypsy in East European? Tzigan. Tzoanim, Tzigan. Pretty close, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay. Now these guys are mentioned, the Tzoanim are mentioned in the Old Testament, like in the book of Genesis. Okay?
Yeah.
And
In the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible.
Yes.
These guys are mentioned.
Tzoanim, as a wandering people. Now, there's oral tradition within Judaism saying that Abraham, our famous patriarch, before he had children with Hagar and Sarah, he had other wives and had other children. And, you know, God told him, send them away. Okay? So they said, Father, where are you going to send us? And says, at least bless us. So he blessed them and they went off. Where do you think they went? They went to India.
They went to India?
They went to India.
To do what?
To hang out. To be. I don't know. That is what Jewish tradition said. They don't specify India, but I think they said the Eretz Hod.
So this could be the return of the descendants of Abraham we're talking about.
Yeah, and the gypsies say that.
Right.
The gypsies, many of them insist.
We have returned.
We are not Indian. You know, we are. And so they have a very close unconscious kinship to Jews. They don't even know why. And they sort of half know, and, you know, yeah, sure, misery loves company. There's that. But there's something deeper, you know. So they are a tribe that came originally from the Middle East. They went to India, and in the 15th century, migrated back, well, no, throughout, you know, Asia and Middle East and so on. Some went as far north as England and Ireland, and some went down to Barcelona, and also some went through the Middle East, through North Africa, and up, crossing the Gibraltar and all that, and into Spain. So, you know, yeah, and Spain was the final stop, because after that was the Atlantic.
So all these cultures coming together.
Yeah, yeah. So flamenco is it's the old, one of the oldest melting pot phenomenas, really. So you get a lot of flamenco say, oh, pure flamenco. So, dude, that's a contradiction in terms right there.
Right.
Flamenco is not a pure product. It became a crystallized musical entity after many years of, you know.
Who were the Spanish composers from this era? Who were the court composers for King Ferdinand?
Oh, I have no idea. But I mean, you know, but it was Narvaez, it was Milan. I don't know if they were actually, I think
Narvaez.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a little after, but
Louis de Milan or whatever.
Yeah. But they were already, you know, 16th century.
Right.
But before that, I don't know. But you know, there's a lot of in terms of musical culture. You know, you have the troubadour culture, instrumental troubadour culture. You know, they play the vihuela, not the lute. But the whole idea of the, you know, the strumming of the guitar. I mean. The flamenco guitar is not just a gypsy, clearly it's not a gypsy, it's a Spanish phenomena, you know, and the gypsies are a part of it, and their contribution to it, of course, is incredibly important. But when it comes to the
contribution, again, being?
The rhythmic
and the expressive. From India.
The rhythmic and the expressive.
Right.
You know, they will take a simple song, right, and if they do it, it'll just grow in dimension,
right,
both in rhythmic nuance and expressive depth.
Yes.
Okay. And they do the same, by the way, the Tsigans in Romania and Hungary, they'll take a Romanian folk song, and when they do it, you're going to go like, oh my God, this is the best music ever. You hear a non-gypsy singing, it's like, oh God, get this thing out of my face.
Right. Go back to your recital.
Yes. Yeah. You know? So that's, the gypsies are this magical catalyst that whatever they touch, you know, they will spicy it up and make it irresistible.
What a beautiful contribution they made to Europe.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then the entire time they're doing it, people are trying to get them down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at Django Reinhardt. Look at,
everybody. Yeah.
I mean, you know.
The best of the best. Well, I know you got to go. I swear to God, I could talk to you forever. I got an idea. Now, you need to get to Times Square, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you wanted to walk to Times Square.
Which is...
We are on Delancey.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not the best idea I told you.
Yeah, no, I think I'll
pass. I just think it's like going to be like a sweaty mess.
Yeah.
I've got an idea.
Yeah.
And you tell me whether you want to do this or not. There's a thing called City Bike.
Yeah.
I'm biking up that way, too.
But I got my guitar.
You got your guitar? No, you can't do that.
No, okay.
I was going to say we could go on a bike ride.
That would have been awesome.
Wouldn't that have been awesome?
That would have been awesome.
If you weren't a guitarist.
I can't have the guitar on my back.
Just go buy one from Guitar Center in Times Square. You can get one.
What?
Just a guitar. Buy just buy a shitty guitar.
Yeah, for the rehearsal.
Oh, man. Well, maybe we'll do this again.
Sure.
Yeah. This was so much fun. Thank you so much, Adam.
Yeah, we barely scratched.
All we did was talk about the opera. Yeah. That's all we needed to talk about. You know, this is 107th episode, so we've already talked about, how is USC? Hey, how are you getting along with everybody? Blah, blah, how is Pepe? But this is one of the best episodes ever.
Oh, thank you.
I just loved it.
Thank you, man.
You're a true intellectual, sir.
Oh, my God, intellectual. For somebody who's a college dropout, thank you very much.
College dropout? Oh, jeez. Wait, real quick. College dropout. What are you talking about? You're a college dropout.
Yeah.
You're a USC dropout?
No, not USC. I wish. I went to college at the Royal Northern College of Music in England in Manchester.
Okay.
Classical guitar. A year and a semester, and after I studied the Ginastera Sonata, I'm like, okay, I'm out of here.
Why? You just didn't like
it? Back then it was very hard to come by really cool.
Still is.
Still
is.
If you think it still is now, imagine 1982. Yeah. There was nothing.
Nothing.
Adam, why didn't you play the Dodgson Sonata?
Brower.
Why don't you get the fuck out of here? You know? I was bored out of my mind with the classical repertoire. I felt very limited, you know. My specific tastes were very narrow. I just loved Albéniz and, like, you know, specific things and this and that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tárrega, I was like, no, come on, I'm not going to do Tárrega. I was too, you know, cocky to appreciate Tárrega back in the day. But, you know, I always, of course, played flamenco. I started both styles at the same time. And my teacher, Gordon Krosky, was always very cool about the fact that, you know, I hope you're keeping up your flamenco chops. I'm like, absolutely. But, you know, and then when I did the Ginastera Sonata, which I adored, you know, I was like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's as far as I can go with this to really feel excited about music.
Right.
And then,
you're not going to play, you know, a Bach recital or something.
No, I am. I loved Bach. And I live and breathe Bach every day of my life.
Good.
He's my, he's, you know. If there wasn't a God, I would worship Bach.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
But he's right there next to him. So, you know. But when I left, I interrupted my study because my father needed a guitarist because his guitarist just dumped him for a 3-month job in Japan. And my father, for completely selfish reasons, said, son, you're staying here. I need a guitarist.
Jeez, Dad.
Yeah, right. Most dads are like, go finish school.
Yeah.
My dad is like the opposite. No, forget school. It's a complete waste of time. I need you here.
Yeah.
And, you know, for selfish reasons or not, he did me the biggest favor.
Yeah, I would say so.
He did me the biggest favor because I literally arrived in Madrid in 1985, which was the beginning of this incredible, flourishing period of flamenco in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at the grassroots level of it, and it was just amazing.
So exciting time.
It was an exciting time. And I lived 7 years in Madrid, you know, living, breathing flamenco, still keeping up my classical, of course. And, you know, it was insane. 7 years of very intense living and learning. And those 7 years really marked my soul forever. Really, and this is the capital that I brought with me to America. But I have to say, America is great. Not to sound like a Republican or anything, but America is awesome.
It's great again.
It's great again.
It'll just get better. It'll just get better, folks.
Because it really allowed me to become what I was, you know, whatever I was cooking inside of me in Europe, I was able to explode with in America and
you do good work. You do good work. It sounds great.
So
sounds great. I can't wait to hear the opera. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming up.
That does it for my time with Adam Del Monte. This is him performing Puntao Rumba off of his latest release. Please go to brettwilliamsmusic.com. And donate to the show. You can click on anything, podcast, media, about, any of those subpages, and you will find it. It's right there on the right-hand side. You can donate a large sum, a small sum, or you can become a member. You will donate $5 a month. And this summer, I promise to start releasing exclusive content for members only. So please go and become a member today. It's not that much. It is about the price of a coffee these days in New York City. We're approaching that. We are now firmly above the $3 mark at this point at some of these, you know, places. I don't know why. They say it's rent. I know it is. It is rent. I mean, it's not gentrification. It's rent. If you want to blame somebody, blame the landlords. They're greedy. All right? Anyway, I'll see you guys soon. Couple of weeks. Don't know who's going to be on, but I'm excited. Bye.